Hello and welcome to the Second Funniest Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. This is episode 529. With me, as always, is the one, the only. It has been said that on many occasions he has vouched for himself. the KevinMiller.com. And you know why that frustrates me is because I can't take credit for that one.
Yeah.
It was the inspiration behind that whole bit is that it just makes me laugh. My other favorite one is that
we're talking about
the Dos Equis, most interesting man in the world. My other favorite one is that his shadow has won fashion awards.
Yeah, that's pretty great. There's some of them where I'm like, because when the camping, you know, I was him for Halloween a few years back.
Yeah.
No one got it.
No?
Because it was in Hollywood.
Maybe you're not Latino enough.
I wasn't Latino, and I just had a suit on, and it wasn't a very great suit.
Okay.
And because I don't have money for a great suit. And I just had a Dos Equis beer bottle. But what else are you supposed to be when you're that dead? So the thing that was
Did you even put gray in your beard?
Yeah, that's too much work.
Yeah.
I'm
starting to get on your friend's board.
Well, then I just looked. None of my friends had a problem with it. Just no one cared. No one was like, hey, what are you? Because I wasn't anything. I was just a guy in a suit. I thought I was.
Kevin's usually more festive.
I hate Halloween now that I'm an adult.
Oh.
When I was a kid, it was like all year I would obsess about Halloween and have night stress dreams that I came to school and it was Halloween and I didn't have a costume.
Really?
Yeah. It was an indicator that I loved theater and that kind of thing at a young age. And now I find costumes to be the least interesting part about theater. I'm like, let's do theater in our clothes and let the character. Don't you understand? It's about art.
I'm a realist.
So when those commercials first came out, he was interesting. It was so brilliant because they did this like span of time of different videos of him as a young man.
That was the first one,
As a young
him,
man.
Him like getting out of a plane, I remember.
And he was doing like a bell lifting with two girls on either side giggling. And you're like, what is that story? And there's a picture of him in like somewhere in the mid 70s on an old 8mm film reel of him opening up a bear trap to let the bear out and like working with the bear. You're like, no, it's okay.
It's okay,
that's an interesting story. You're like, I want to know that I want to meet the team that came up with this interesting story. Because all of those, I'm like, that's a story.
Yeah.
Now, he's more incredible than Jesus. Like, the shit that he does is like, no one can do that.
It's been said that Jesus has confessed to him.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's where they're going. We're like, this is ridiculous.
They done where it says the alligators wrestle with him?
Yeah.
I hope so. That's a good one.
Just to be clear, he's not more interesting than Jesus. No. You can't say.
Well, if you've ever heard him, it's worth a search to find him on
the actual actor.
The actual actor was on Adam Carolla's podcast.
Oh, was he really?
And he was a dullard. Like that was.
Yeah, he's like, actually he's a little light spoken.
Yeah,
he's a little old.
And he's married now to the agent that booked him on this.
Oh, really? Yeah, he knows how to.
And she sits in the corner, and it was funny because he was on Carolla. But the funnier episode is the episode right after he was on, where Carolla kind of says, "He goes, you know what's interesting about the most interesting man in the world? Nothing, it turns out, other than the fact that he's pee whipped."
Yeah, I got a buddy who said he met him at a party and told my buddy's an actor and encouraged him. You just have to stay on it because eventually you'll find the thing. Look at me, I was 54 and I finally got the gig and now I'm set. You just have to stay with it. You just have to stay with it.
Wow.
Really? That's the encouragement you're going to give? Remember when we went to Comic-Con?
Yeah. Where did you find that picture?
That's on the internet. This is a great little comic. I can't see who drew it, but I'll put it up on the page. And it's great. It pretty much encapsulates.
That's the one you were talking about at dinner.
Yeah. This pretty much encapsulates what Comic-Con's all about. And it's animated.
Oh my
gosh, looks
let me
like
look
3D
at that
anime.
More.
And it's pretty great. There's a pretty hot-looking chick. And she's computer drawn, and she's at a table trying to get an autograph from an artist who is pointing
of
at her cleavage. Yeah, it's a picture of her, and then so she's dressed up as the character we assume.
Oh, okay, good point.
And she's kind of bent over, and she's looking behind her because there are four ogling nerds.
One, two, three, four. One is in a red R2-D2 costume peering out from there.
R4.
Like a parquet butter.
Yeah.
And then I like the guy that has his smartphone as well.
Yeah, taking pictures of her ass.
And then the guy that he's signing for is actually pointing at her cleavage, which I also enjoy. But here's the best part about it is the look on her face is like,
Here I am at Comic-Con.
I'm kind of uncomfortable about this, but...
But that's what Comic-Con is.
Right.
It's right. Like this bizarre, bizarre pajama party for like one out of every eight girls you see.
It's funny that our friend from last year, I just thought was the next name.
Well,
was this
yeah.
in your... Like, is this your
no,
photos?
I did
that's a Google image.
Yeah.
Because I thought,
this,
like, wow.
I got this picture.
Well,
of
it's
this
funny
because
to the left, if you're doing like a Google image scroll, yeah. that's what we talked about predominantly about Comic-Con last yeah. year was the slave girl outfit, which has kind of been not as prevalent.
Wasn't
this last
as big
year.
This year.
Yeah. I saw, I think, two.
I saw two slave girls. I saw two, or no, just one. No, I think I saw two Fifth Element girls.
Yeah.
And that.
Eon Flux was huge last year.
Yeah.
This year,
the Fifth Element girl was uncomfortable, though.
Slutty
because...
Ewoks, which was weird and hard to figure out. Like, it's really, it's funny how this works out. And
that is not a thing.
I know it's not a thing, but no, it was.
Did
it
you
was
really
a thing
say slutty
there.
Ewoks?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you were being funny.
No,
I
thought you had mentioned it to me, but Heath was like, because he takes pictures.
That sounds
pictures.
Like something Heath would do.
Heath
Heitch.
Heath takes pictures. Heath Heitch, who's been on the show, he's a comic friend of mine, and he goes to every Comic-Con, and he met me there, and he goes, have you seen the slutty Ewok trend or whatever? Because he takes pictures with chunky slave girls. And
this
puts
is
them
brought
on
to
Facebook.
You by
Pepsi Throwback. For all you Jews out there, come April, Pepsi Throwback is just for you.
I'm at a band called Come April.
I'm just going to do it.
I don't get it.
So anyway, he takes pictures with chubby slave girls, which is weird. It's funny to know that Heath is just like a really nice, funny guy, and his comedy is really clean and everything.
Yeah.
But then he does something like this where it's like, I don't, that kind of seems kind of rude, maybe. But at the same time, this is where I think it makes sense that the girls are fine with it. Like, they dressed up that way.
Yeah,
he's not
really
mocking them. He's just saying, here's what they dressed up as.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he's doing.
But you get it when you see the trend. Like, the whole of the parts tell a story.
Well, they used to take, like, a yearbook photo of all of the slave girls, like, on the steps of the San Diego Convention Center. But, they couldn't have this year, because we literally saw two, maybe three tops.
Well, we weren't at the whole convention.
And he said, he goes, the new trend is slutty Ewoks. And that's what it was. So if you saw a girl at Comic-Con that looked like a barbarian, if you look upon closer inspection...
I don't understand what a slutty Ewok is.
So a slutty Ewok
I'm getting the real computer. None of this iPad stuff. It's like a window to... It's like an overgrown iPhone. I can't make a phone call.
Can you get on the internet here? I did give you the password.
Can I?
So anyway...
Will I? Would I?
Peg leg. So anyway, I just... It's like a barbarian costume, but when you see the hoods all look the same.
Oh, they're all like, yeah.
They're all
so
like
is there
the
somebody
Ewok
outside
hoods.
Selling
no.
slutty Ewok?
That's the thing I want to know. What blog do these people find that they
It
can...
was probably Brent Spiner.
That's what I want to know.
It was probably him, like, this year, everybody is a slutty Ewok.
Does he have that ability? Like, does he have a blog, or is he, like, I don't know how connected he is on social networks to have
He's
those kind
big.
Of trends happen?
But that's what I was, maybe not him. But somebody like him. There's probably a few people.
Oh, I'm going to be so angry if this is like it's like Nerdist. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
it's
see,
like something
like
that's easily accessible. And
he was like, you know what I will do is change the fate of Comic-Con.
Right.
Choose your potato.
That was my bit from dinner. I made baked potatoes with shredded barbecue chicken in them. And I kept
and
saying,
now it's
choose
stuck in my
your
head.
Potato.
That's good. We should audition for this. Okay. Kevin Miller, take one. Choose your potato. Take two.
You want to? I know this isn't interesting to our listeners, I'm sure.
Who
but
cares?
You want to? You want to do? Let's do. Choose your potato.
Okay.
Is the line?
Yep.
And then I will give you the last voiceover job that I did. I will give you the notes that I received. Now, mind you, this is 40 seconds of what the actual that we're for choose your potato is actually representing in reality. 40 seconds of recording for a Smithsonian e-learning project. Okay, so go ahead, you do your take one.
This is Kevin Miller. Take one.
Uh huh.
Choose your potato,
and then so you submit it, and then this is the email that you would get back. Listen, I'm gonna need you to do it again. You sounded really forced, we want to pick up your energy like you did in take two, but at take two, it sounded like you were yelling. And so I went back and I listened maybe it kind of sounded like you were yelling. So I do another one where it's like more conservative and don't
choose your potato.
Perfect. Send that off and go, okay, yeah, Justin, listen, I'm really sorry, but we're going to have you do it again because while you don't sound pushed,
Now you sound like it's everything is too choppy. It needs to just be conversational. And this is what I love about the way people direct.
What?
And it reminds me, we've talked about this before on the show, where
What does that even mean?
Remember the anime? Yeah, exactly. It gets better. The anime direction that you would get, like any kind of anime or role-playing game
he's
character.
He's edgy, but not, yes. but nice. Yeah. He's cool, but also dorky.
So the direction...
He's Japanese, but clear-sounding French.
Exactly.
He's got a gruff, ravelly, smooth voice.
I can really listen to this all day. That's what I'm laughing at.
He has a bolstery, quiet radio voice. It's a loud whisper.
Bolstery, quiet radio voice. Oh, shit, that's funny. Oh, my God, that's funny. A bolstery, it was funny because you guys can't see it, but Kevin did arms out, arms in, arms out again to even exaggerate the differences.
Yeah,
between...
he's somewhere in here.
He's out and he's in.
It's like a bird flapping. I want...
Oh, that's beautiful. So she says to
me... So I come back, I'd be like this, I'd be like, choose your potato. That's what I would submit.
That's
then I'd be like,
do.
F you.
Yeah. I'm choose your potato. And so she goes, she said, listen, if you can't get this, I'd be glad to direct you, and or I'd be glad to coach you. And I said,
how many people are auditioning for this? Why are they willing...
Here's the thing. I've already booked it.
She
goes,
you were submitting the file for
the file
report.
for the actual thing.
Okay.
And then she goes, to me, here's what I'm saying is that I submitted an audition, right?
Yeah.
And then I gave the read that I gave for the audition, even though it was a different script.
Yeah.
I gave the read that I gave for the audition because I figured that's what got me the job. And my tone was that there's a tone that is for a learning thing where you're teaching something, and they do it under the guise that it's, oh, we want it to sound conversational, but you need, and there's like bolded words that don't make sense that need to be emphasized.
They're not writers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And that's what I love is that. So then she goes, it just needs to be conversation. Like you're like, this is what I love. Like, you know, you just are talking to your friend about your specific jobs as an investment coordinator at the Smithsonian Museum. You know, like that, just casual,
you know, you got that.
Coffee conversation. So,
go on.
So I go, okay, she goes, if you want, I could coach you, but this is how I know that this isn't on me. She goes, if you want, I can coach you, but I have company coming today that was already supposed to arrive a half an hour ago. So it will have to wait till after they go.
Yeah.
So I'm a total stranger to her who is in her employ, and she has also decided to offer up the information that the company that she has invited, of which I am unaware who or where they are, is a half hour late. And so it's like, okay. Like, and so I go, well,
thanks for the overshare.
Yeah. So
clearly
I said,
you're an awkward person.
I said, I think I could get it. I said, why don't we do this? Let me take one more stab after my company leaves. I'll send it off to you. And if you don't like it.
Who is punctual. Thank
yeah.
you. I have good friends.
Except better than yours. We could set up a Skype connection on Monday. So I go, all right. So now my only goal is to not sound pushed, and I'm just going to sound conversational. So I do three takes. I've sent her three takes every single time. I do another three takes, and then on a fourth take, I change the script to make it sound like if I was actually saying it.
That's good.
To make it sound even easier. And I go, so I sent her a thing. I said, on the fourth pass, I kind of tweak the wording a little bit, which I know is taboo, and I meant no disrespect. I go, just because of your concern for it being conversational, I just thought that might make it come across even more conversational if I just made it my own, like my own words. Mm-hmm. So I hope you like it. And so she said, this is what I get the response back. She goes, I think I could piece something together from what you've given us. And she goes, just to offer you a little bit of advice, and here's a tip in the future.
Here it comes.
She goes, when sounding conversational, what you don't want to do is break up words. So, for instance, when you said office of – so here's the line. In fact, I wonder if I have the script just sitting
choose
there.
Your potato.
No, I don't. She goes, the word is the OI, or Office of Investments, works with the region's investment committee to to generate spending policies and budget goals. Like, that was the line, right?
That's pretty good memorization. He's not reading that.
I said that
BTW.
A lot.
Yeah.
And so,
choose your potato.
And I know this isn't the context of the show, but my point is that if you were saying in an e-learning project, if you were saying, and here's the way it was written, the OI, and in parenthetical, said Office of Investments. How is that?
That's terrible writing.
Parentheticals to be used in dialogue
They're
as
not.
Conversation.
It's terrible.
You know what I mean? So I already made it my own by saying the OI, or Office of Investments, works with the Regents of Investment Committee.
Good.
So that's how I worked it in there.
Well done.
So what her point was is that when you say Office of Investments, you don't want to say Office of Investments. When I'm coming off of an abbreviation in an e-learning project, what I don't want to do then is emphasize the words that I'm explaining why I'm abbreviating. Like, how does that make sense? And that was your tip for saving my voiceover career? Like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, she goes, she wrote it in parentheticals, but without spaces.
That's nice.
That's how she read it. She goes, so what I guess I should have said, the OI, or Office of Investments, is what I guess she wanted. Because it wasn't like I went Office of Investments.
You know what, though? You know, you and my wife suffer from the same thing, which is that you somehow are a magnet to people giving unnecessary criticism. Like, because you're nice people, or because people, like how cats just somehow know who people are that hate cats.
Yeah, are allergic, and they want to rub their butts in their face.
I like cats. They don't care about me.
Yep.
They'll go straight to my stepbrother, who hates cats, and jump on his lap, sit on his head, lay eggs in his pockets, whatever it is cats do.
I don't think you love cats. I think you love birds.
Yeah, they are the same thing. Lemons and limes, shit your hole.
Maybe in Jurassic Park, cats became birds.
Why?
And birds became dinosaurs.
They were gonna make it where they're actual people. They didn't do this. You for some reason, because you're I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
People that need to bully somebody bully you because they know they can see that your margin for being bullied is deeper than mine.
Yeah. Yes.
Because the moment somebody says something like that to me, I slam them back. Right. Let me give you an example. Recently, somebody submitted a request to me and said something to the effect of TBT. And so I asked around the office, I said, did we make any announcement about something that's TBT? Because I have no idea what that stands for. And somebody jokingly said, oh, maybe it's to be determined. And they even, like, they thought to be determined. They're like, no, that's not it.
Yeah, that's
like,
not it.
No, that's not it. So I just wrote them. I said, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with TBT is. I'd love to help you out. Let me know. And they write back, smug. TBT stands for to be determined. So as kindly as I could, I simply wrote back, isn't that TBD? Like, how else can you say, no, idiot? That's right. TBD.
Yeah.
So I thought if I posted this question, funny enough, they never wrote back.
Oh.
So that person won't be giving me a hard time or trying to give me unnecessary notes about how to live life. Because I know how to spell words, and they don't. You would probably...
Maybe this is why it's taken me 34 years to get to the point where somebody kind of... Like, in this situation, I'm under her employ, and she's kind of got me because, you know what I mean? So, other situations, like, I've hit a point in my life within the last, I would say, maybe a year and a half, 2 years, that I'm like, if I don't like you, I will tell you to F off. All right, time for you to go.
You know, as a voiceover actor, that's a fascinating story. I generally find voiceover actors to be very dull. And no offense to anybody that loves the show, I'm glad you're listening, but I don't get why you find this fun. Like, here's the thing. If you're listening to this show because I was the voice of Sly Cooper, I try to find new and interesting things to talk about in my relationship with Sly, but I didn't make the character up. I just read some crap that's written on a
piece of paper. It's not crap.
That's true. That's right. Yeah. I just read some amazing words that are written on a piece of paper. I didn't mean crap as in it's crap.
How every Oscar speech should be presented.
That's exactly it. With some very few exceptions. There are people that bring a lot to the table and do their own. And I think I bring something to it. But in terms of, like, I really hope you're listening to the show because you thought it was cool that I'm the voice of Sly.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, he's an interesting person. I want to find out more about his life.
Right.
Awesome. But if you're still sitting there going, when is he going to let the bomb out about Sly 5 and how I can play it? Stop listening now.
Please unsubscribe and watch our numbers dwindle to 5. Yeah. It'll be
five Brooke, loyal people. It'll be all the admins of the I Want Sly Cooper as their own animated series page. Brooke, Sam, Toby, Bradley, Jaden.
And Ryan and Jimmy Johnson, I bet, too.
So I say all that to bring it back into Comic-Con because the one panel you and I had the time to go sit down at was for the Turtles.
Right.
And here's the deal about that. It was a very informative panel.
Right.
I enjoyed it. I loved it when the showrunner got up there. He gave us a bunch of, like, I almost started to cover my ears and close my
spoilers.
Eyes.
Spoilers.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
Mania. Like, no holds bar. Just, right. Here's what we're doing next season. And I was
it
a
made
little...
me feel like I had to turn whatever nerd card I thought I found in my wallet in my late 30s or mid-30s. Is that because I'm like, no, I don't want to know.
I didn't want to know.
And I think that's, it's like what people, like what just what you talked about. When Sly was announced, and that's what kind of blew the numbers up on our show. It's that that's what they want. Maybe it's a part of the culture that Comic-Con creates.
And I think Comic-Con is the front lines for spoiler town. Like that, when you want spoilers, you go to Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Because I've heard, when I've gone to my comic book store, he's even said, people ask him, like, why don't you go to Comic-Con? Why don't you? He's like, because it'll eventually be on the shelf. I'll read it. I don't need to find out. I don't need to drive 2 hours to get a glimpse of something that somebody is deciding before it's actually done. That being said, I found the things that they talked about their process, like how they develop characters and the work that they go through and their ideas. And
I like the idea that there's a new character that's coming out that was something he came up with as a kid.
Yeah. How fortunate is it? Like, that's how I did that. You did that. We all did that.
Yeah.
And for him to be like, dream realized, right. I'm like, this is what Comic-Con's about. So that's fascinating. But then.
Is it rude if we don't say what it was? Like, I feel like. What was it?
Well, it was
salamander,
I mean,
or something.
Yeah, it was a salamander.
Gecko-nator?
I mean, he's not a big spoiler because it's a character that you've never heard of.
Right.
He made it up. So it was a character called the Neutralizer.
That's right, Neutralizer.
And
that was so
but there
cool.
was some stuff in there that I was like, oh, that's fantastic. And I should have seen that coming.
Yeah.
And what a great way to launch season 2.
Yeah.
And I'm stoked for it. It looks like a lot of fun.
I'm sidetracking your point. I apologize.
No, well, you know where I'm going. But the one disappointment was. At the very end, after listening to this whole thing, well, I'll leave that at the end because that's at the end. So on the stage, they've got the showrunner, the show producer, those two people, and then 5 of the 6 or 7 main
they
cast
have,
members.
They have Donatello,
the
Raphael, so Sean Ashton is there,
Rob
Paulson. What's the guy's? The guy that does Barry Sykes or Greg Sykes?
Yeah, yeah. Who does Michelangelo?
He's Michelangelo. They have Mae Whitman, who's April,
uh-huh.
And then I forget his name, but the guy who's Shredder.
Yeah.
So everybody's there except for
5 guys.
The Leonardo guy, who was the guy from the kid
and then
from
Splinter,
American Pie.
Whoever Splinter.
And Splinter, yeah.
So that I mean, that's the bulk of the
cast. And then
they
have the two executive producers, and then an exec from Nick.
Yeah,
was
and
also
so
there.
So they have stuff. The producers, the creators, they all have stuff to say, but the voiceover actors had like virtually. Nothing to say about the entire process. And they even called it out. Like, they said, like, I just read some crap. Like, they didn't say that.
No.
They're very funny stuff. And they were very respectful. They're much better at this than I am. But at the end of the day, like, they talk about the fact that they work on this show like they're in a club or something, which they are. But after that, in terms of getting to know more about the Turtles universe or what it's like to, like, what are we going to get to see? There's nothing. Because they're just voiceover actors that read stuff on a page. Some of them are trading heavily on that fact and keep doing lines in their character. A couple of them are even kind of know, like, I'm not sure what you want me to do right now. I'll sit here.
Yeah.
And I
should have been at the Superman panel.
Oh, gosh. I have a lot of respect for all those voice actors. I thought that, I mean, Rob Paulson is the king of voiceover. Mae Whitman is phenomenal. They're great. Sean Astin and I are old friends.
Yeah.
And
I wish you would have gotten up there and asked them about the migratory pattern of voice.
It was Santa Trap. But
Santa Trap,
I'm
sorry.
No.
For those of you who don't know, is that when
no
Kevin,
one knows.
When Kevin was in college, he had written a script for like a project and the screenwriter. So the screenwriting professor thought it was really great and helped him kind of shop it around. And Sean Ashton, the kid from Goonies and the voice of Raphael.
And Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, The Hobbit and stuff. He signed on to direct it and was helping to sell it because he liked it. And
it didn't
like
go
a Christmas
anywhere.
Movie. Yeah, and
yeah, it was a fun Christmas movie. It got close, but it didn't go anywhere. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this podcast.
It wouldn't be about Sly.
That's probably true. It was happening concurrently. Both those things were happening. I was getting Sly, and this script was taking off.
Oh.
So for a brief moment, it looked like
if
I was
we had to do a Christmas-themed video game podcast. That would be fun.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah.
You know, if that maybe I should try to sell that, and if it doesn't work, we'll do a staged reading of it.
An audio reading.
An
like
audio
a radio
reading.
Play.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
It's just sitting on my shelf. No one's buying it anyway.
We have a bunch of people that are friends.
Somebody makes a Facebook page called I Want a Audio Reading of the Santa Trap, and we get 100,000 likes.
Super Pups is never going to see the light of day, though.
I've got
Super
a better
Pups?
Project. Okay. Yeah, it was Super Pups.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, I don't mean to be flippant. I'm putting it on a little for dramatic
pace.
Yeah,
for the show.
I'm not an angry nerdist, but I just don't get it, I think, is what I experienced at Comic-Con. Like, why is that who we want to hear from? Meanwhile, they even pointed out, like, hey, the animators are in the room.
No, the creator.
Okay. So they said the designers are in the room. That's okay. Can we edit that out?
Yeah.
We can. Don't. So, and then, like, 9 people stand up, and they're like, I want to hear from those guys. Like, what's your color palette? When do you decide what angle and how, you know, what's your production flow for storyboards to screen? Like, that stuff is interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe that was in another panel. I don't mean to be ignorant. But then at the very end, they're like, yeah, and in the room, Kevin Eastman, the co-creator of the Turtles, is here. Let's bring him up. They didn't have a chair for him on stage.
Yeah.
He used half of another chair and kind of crouched down behind. He said some very kind things. I've learned since then he has absolutely nothing to do with the show.
Yeah.
Completely removed. He has been bought out. Nickelodeon owns the Turtles. He gets a paycheck and says, thank you, Michelangelo.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so that's why we don't see anything from him. But still, bring him up from the beginning. They're not, the voice actors aren't
he's
doing
at
anything.
Comic-Con.
Yeah, exactly. He had his own booth and he had his own project, something new that he's working on. But it's like, it'd be like going to Disneyland and Walt Disney sitting in the back going, well, you know, it's okay. I mean,
two Disney freaks sitting next to Walt Disney going, I think that's Walt Disney.
I think that's the guy.
I don't know. It just looks like people dress up when they come to Disneyland.
It'd be like going to Comic-Con and Kevin Eastman would be sitting in the audience
good
for
one.
Ninja Turtle.
Yes.
I was going to say Stan Lee, but, you know, Stan Lee's just good about holding himself. I don't know. It just seemed backwards. And then, quite frankly, the panel fell apart in the last 5 minutes. The rails just came off, and I was uncomfortable for the safety of the guests on stage.
People started just randomly going up.
Some dude, I mean, out of his gourd, stupid geekdom, just struck him from the heavens.
And the way he carried himself, when I saw it, I didn't freak out like you did, because to me it looked like, it's weird to me that the guy who's working the panel is walking around, but I think he's trying to find somebody to say, you guys need to wrap it up.
No.
Because I knew it was coming towards the end of the time.
He came around, he shook everybody's hands, they're all like, why are you close? And then I think that was the same guy that then went back in the audience, shouted into the room as loud as he could, points at Rob Paulsen and says, don't you guys think he makes the best Raphael? Right next to his co-star who now plays Raphael. Ugh. Like, I get it. That was your childhood.
Yeah.
And write a letter. But what did you think was going to happen to the whole room? We're all going to be like, yeah, get that Sean-assed asshole out of here. Rob Paulsen for life. Kill him! Kill him! Go back to Mordor!
Truffle shuffle that nerd out of here!
Yeah, what is gonna happen? Yeah. Obviously, I thoroughly enjoy Sean Astin's Raphael, and I think Rob Paulsen is a better Donatello than he was a Raphael. That's my opinion. He's welcome to his opinion. The inappropriate place to bring up either opinion was in the middle of a panel where you don't have a microphone in front of your face. So I told him as such afterwards, and I got removed from Comic-Con.
Oh, that's why you left. I was like, where did Kevin go?
It was awkward. That being said, I wish,
Well, it's interesting because it's funny how people's attachment to these voiceover actors is that they just want to hear them do the voice. Like,
be the character.
Yeah,
be the character.
Do the thing.
Yeah.
And then what's interesting is that, like, what you're describing is that there are people who could be the character and be compelling and interesting.
Yeah.
And then there are people who could just be the character and, like, unless you tell me what to say, I got nothing.
Yeah.
And I think it's unfair that people judge them like they're less.
No.
And that's what they signed on to do.
It's a wonderful craft.
Yeah, like, that's what they were hired to do. They weren't hired to generate the ideas and concepts of Donatello.
Yeah.
But he's a bad example because I thought Rob was actually really funny, and he can work off the cuff. Yeah.
Yeah, he probably can. But name any of the characters. Yeah. Like, name anyone else.
And then, it was funny because
they even joking said, improvise an episode of Turtles.
They panicked. They're like,
and they could have said anything. I mean, which is the number one rule of improv. If any one of them had just said, fade from black.
Yeah.
Sean Astin could live!
Right. Well, and what it is, though, is that you take these people that aren't in charge creatively, and here's what I've learned through listening to Rob Paulsen's podcast, Talkin' Toons, is that you find out that these people that do kid shows, they they have a that's where they let out their kind of like adult humor, and so it's like all next thing you know, Raphael and Donatello would be making out, and it's at Comic-Con with Nickelodeon execs there, which is like, you know what I mean? Like, I think that's why they kind of go, oh gosh.
It'd be like the Sly Gang robbing KFC to get a sack of something.
Right. Exactly. Oh,
how did we not get a cease and desist letter for that?
I don't know. I think it's because it's just short of not being big enough. Like,
or considerably short of not being big enough.
No, I think it's. I think we were knocking on the door of a lawyer getting a call.
We have several people at Sony who listen to the show who tell me regularly, I love your show.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for hiring me as a voice actor, by the way.
You flippant son of a...
I want to be very clear. My point is, I don't understand...
Your point isn't to say that you don't understand the craft. It's
no,
not, or
I don't understand hero worship.
Yes.
I don't get why those... And it'd be different if it was a room full of actors. Yeah. Like, that would be a different panel.
Because I want to have a job. And,
they're like, wow, you know, how do you... And that was the questions, like, let's talk about how you generate the character. Let's talk about your audition process. Let's talk about, do you walk in cold? Do you get to read the script ahead of time? Do you have table reads? Let's talk about that. That's not what it was about.
Cowabunga or Booyakasha was an actual question.
It was a topic about, let me show you an assload of spoilers.
Yep.
And the talent is sitting here.
Yeah.
Why? Why are those two things happening at the same time? I didn't understand.
Yeah. And that, like, the one of the funniest moments though was having the guy who does the voice of Shredder read a description of the room in the hotel, like of the view and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, I thought that was very funny that, and but it was. Yeah, you're right. It's interesting that they're like, oh, I can't believe they're here, but they're just people.
Then do something. I don't know. And then so I need to go see more panels to see if they all.
They're all
fall
the
apart like that.
I saw a bunch because when I went the next day with Nick, who had been on the show a long time ago, we went to like the Arrow panel. We went to the Superman panel, and it is a lot of that. Like, it's interesting to me what I don't know if it's what the nerd culture actually wants, or if it's what marketing people that are not really nerdy think the nerd culture wants.
Either way.
Because, for instance, this is what I thought was hilarious. So there's a guy who loves Superman. They're talking about the celebration of, like, 75 years of Superman. Wow. And they have the kid.
Really?
They have the kid in the new Man of Steel movie who plays the young Clark Kent.
Uh-huh.
He's all of 15, 16 maybe. He was 13 when he shot the movie. And they're asking him about why he thinks Superman... And then they have this other chick. She was the one that annoyed me. All she did was the voice of Supergirl in the latest Superman release. And I think it's Unbound is the name of it.
There's probably 400 women who have played Supergirl.
And so they have this chick.
Throughout the history of Supergirl.
And I just didn't like that she was like, she goes, well, you know what? She goes, like, why do you think Superman is such an important character, you know, to time or whatever? And she goes,
what do I know?
Yeah, so she's like 19 or something, this girl, and she's, you know, talking about, like, she goes, well, I just think that, you know, if I could speak for Supergirl, is that I just feel like she, and I guess Superman too, kind of stand for, you know, wholesomeness and, you know, doing right and good. And I think that it's just in a time in the world now where I think that there isn't a lot of that right now. And I'm like, how could you say that there isn't a lot of good in the world right now?
At 15.
Yeah, like looking at the world you live in, you are literally in San Diego, the best weather on the planet, okay, at a celebration of pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about it, of necessities of life, the most insignificant thing has a mass amount of people attending and throwing money at, you know, like...
It's not politics.
Yes.
It's not
the most abundant nutrition in the convention grounds is Mrs. Fields cookies. You have people that you could walk up and see, you know, get their autograph, and you're trying to say that we are at a dark time in mankind history. I think that there's a couple of chicks that lived in small villages in the Viking parts of North America that have different opinions.
Yeah.
I think that the people in the islands of the Caribbean in the 16 and 1700s have different opinions. Like, I just...
Jeez, ask people in San Diego 200 years ago.
Right.
They would have different opinions.
Exactly.
50 years ago.
And it's like, no, I think things are much better now.
Dentistry has improved.
I can figure out. I got to her panel because I looked at something on my phone, and I didn't even have to ask somebody. Like, I just, you know what I mean? Like, how is that a bad time? And then they make this kid who's a teenager, like, you know, he's just an awkward, good-looking teenager, and he's got to come up with some kind of answer for something, you know? It was just...
Well, that reminds me an awful lot of, like, Miss Teen America contests,
yes.
where they're like, say something in depth and thoughtful.
Yes.
Like, you know what I did today? I read a script. I read it well. I did all the things I'm supposed to do. I created a character. I made it interesting. But I'm not the guy that wrote it.
I also went to the Arrow panel. And
what is Arrow for those?
Arrow is a green Arrow show on WB or CW or whatever. And it starts off as like a soap opera that happens. So I felt like what it was is that in the beginning of the series, it's like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do like a Vampire Diaries show, which is predominantly, I think, for gay men and women. And then so we need to bring
this is
in
a great pitch. I'm sold so far.
So we need to like I thought that they go, well, if we make a show, we call it the Arrow. And we hint that it's about the Green Arrow, but it's just going to have attractive dudes doing a soap opera.
Arrow-y things.
That we're going to bring chicks, and their boyfriend will watch it, or their husband will watch it because it's about Green Arrow. Like, maybe that's how they could get a couple instead of one or the other, you
Smart.
Know? And so but it's just weird, you know, that they do. It's a lot of like, I don't know. Do you guys, like, they're talking about the love interests and asking the audience who should the Oliver Queen, like, go after? And, like, people are, like, cheering at it. And so that's where I felt like I was like you, where I'm like, I don't understand. Are you trying to make me feel like I have a say? And because I feel like that's condescending and patronizing because I know better.
Maybe the fans love it. Like, I mean, that's the thing about Comic-Con, right, is these are fans.
Yeah.
This is a bulk of the people there are not interested in breaking into the industry, although we learned later that there are several panels about...
Which was the whole point of Comic-Con.
Oh, was it?
When it originally started, the whole intent of it was that people who were fans of comic books, this was a way that they could meet with industry professionals, and it's a thing that has
become members of the industry.
They could come, and that's a complete...
Not mingle with the industry.
No, they could come and show their artwork and what they've done, and that's a complete sidebar now of Comic-Con.
Which we walked through
to get
to the
smallest square footage space in Comic-Con now, because they still do it, where they have artists set
alley.
Up. And then they... No, that's different.
Oh, is it?
So out in the entrance, in the hallway, you know how they have all that pipe and drape and stuff?
Yeah.
There's an area over there where you can come and meet with somebody, and you bring your portfolio, and they have like maybe a publisher or a colorist or somebody who works at Marvel or maybe Dark Horse or something along those lines, and they'll kind of give you like feedback on what. And then some people, if they look at it, they're like, "Listen, I really like what you do. Give me your card. I might know of somebody." Because I saw another documentary. I can't remember the name of it, but you see these four people and their stories at Comic-Con or whatever. And one was about two people who fell in love through Comic-Con, and then he proposed at...
Sounds like a wonderful documentary.
It was. It was actually really good. He proposed to his girlfriend during a Kevin Smith panel, and then the other three were artists that were trying to get into the industry, and I think one of them kind of made it in, sort of, but the other two were said, oh, well, you need to work on this, and this, your lines, and it was interesting, the critiques, because you see these things as a person who's not an artist, and you're like... That is beautiful to me.
Yeah.
And then them go, yeah, but your lines on this are just kind of like, it's just missing a little something.
Having now hung out with a comic illustrator a few times, and then Comic-Con has made me really start to look at comics with that kind of lens, which is both extremely educating, educational, and also kind of ruin them a little
for me. Yeah, bubble bursting. Yeah, that's what I would imagine.
Because I've just always enjoyed comic, and I don't spend a lot of time staring at the artwork, and sometimes I've slowed myself down and be like, okay, wait, look at the panel, soak it in, don't just read it like it's a book. I mean, there's a reason why you chose to read a comic. And so now that I've been talking to artists and like things that you can, like a lot of comic book artists will move on to do storyboard artistry. And so they'll get, what I've heard is that sometimes they'll get busted for being too two-dimensional or being kind of routine. Because if you're doing comic work, you can play to your strengths and you can make it look arty and you do all that. If you're doing storyboard work, I mean, you're the eye of the camera. So you need to change up direction. You need to choose a new angle. You can't do tricks. You can't hide behind the illustrative artness of it because you're going to be creating a camera and you'll get in trouble from the director. Like, do something different.
Yeah.
And so now I've been reading these comics and I'm like halfway through reading the run of Guardians of the Galaxy, because they're going to be a new film in 2 years, and I have no idea who they are, so I wanted to read about it. And about six books in, I'm like, this dude doesn't like to draw faces. There are, on every page, there's a panel where somebody is in shadow, or her head is churned so much that her hair covers her face, or they're really far away, and you just see eyes and maybe a nose. But he loves hands, and he loves architecture and background, but faces, like, if he could cheat, he'll cheat. I'm like, I never would have noticed that before I began to think
that's interesting.
That there are human beings that have strengths and weaknesses and things they like to do and don't like to do. And he's like, oh, draw a face. If I got it, we got to get up close to show the emotion if it calls for that. But I'd really rather not.
I don't know why, but that reminded me, because you said storyboarding in films, is that we were talking about spoilers. I had a very interesting, although I'm sure a chunk of our audience already knows because it's been a few weeks, but for anybody who doesn't know,
Iron Man 3 is coming out on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Spoiler!
Yeah. Well, actually, I was shocked is that they were talking about, at the Superman panel, they were talking about what are we going to do for the next movie, and the writer
at
said...
the next Superman movie?
Yes. He goes, we're in pre-production, so we're writing it now, and we decided that it would be the most fun and the most interesting since... The idea, like, they talk about, spoiler alert on this, I'm about to ruin the ending of Man of Steel.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, well, then never mind. I can't do it then.
Thank you for respecting.
But there's an element to it that is, I don't know if I could, can I allude to it or will that ruin it too much for you if I don't tell you what happened?
I don't know what's going to, I know that there's like a 30-minute long unnecessary battle in the end that kind of redoes the whole climax.
Yeah, there's a moment
that's
where,
like on every critic.
There's some point, it's not at the end, but there's some point in the movie where he does something that is un-Superman-esque.
Okay.
And if you've seen the movie, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. And and if you have not, then I haven't ruined anything.
How does this movie compare to Dark Knight Rises?
Here's what I think. I think that what it does is what Chris Nolan did for Batman, I think he's done for Superman.
Okay.
It's a very compelling story. There's a magical moment to me, like film wise, when what's his name, Jonathan Kent, Clark Kent's father, who's played by Kevin Costner. There's a moment where he just puts his hand up at something, and it is just beautiful.
Can't
like
wait.
It is perfectly shot, perfectly acted.
Blu-ray?
I don't know, but it was just I was like, wow. I was really impressed and drawn into the story. And what I thought was interesting is that there was an element of it felt like a disconnect in a lot of the Batman movies. While I enjoyed the story and the arc, where the Superman movie had me really invested.
Yeah.
So anyway, somebody had said something of like, you know, well, he does this thing that's not really Superman, you know, esque and whatever. And he goes, well, that's why we debated a long time. If this is why we called it Man of Steel, because at this point in the story, he is not Superman. That this is him leading up to Superman. And so,
all right,
we
so
leave this
Batman
movie
begins.
And he's Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And
he has his moral code.
And yes. And so then they said, and what we thought would be interesting is who better for him to then take this new moral code and put it against? And they said, and that person is Batman.
Ah.
So the next Superman
it
was funny because I was there with Nick, and even I, who I like this stuff, but I don't get heavily invested. I went, like, I did a, like, what?
Well, this has been, we have been waiting for this movie for 10 years.
Right. That's what I thought was interesting about it, but I felt like it was interesting that it came on the heels of wrapping up the Batman movies for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we just did a trilogy, everybody loved them.
We would have had the movie Avengers not made $500 million.
Right.
Dollars.
Right.
That made DC go, okay, all right, well, maybe Batman's not done.
Yeah, we should do Justice League.
$500 million.
Yeah.
Way to go, Marvel. $500 million
yep.
for a movie. It's probably made $1 billion by now.
Oh, yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it's here's
that's
what I love.
That's Skylander money.
That came out. That came out on Blu-ray, I think, sometime in the spring.
Yeah.
I want to say. Mm-hmm. And I looked recently before I moved, so like a month ago, I looked, and it was still on the top listed of rented movies on Amazon.
Here's the thing that's so bizarre about it is that Captain America, not a great movie. Like, if you remove it from the lineage or from the whole thing, like, if you just watch the Captain America movie, it's got some major problems. The ending of that film, that movie has not been punished enough for how bad it ends. period. Mm-hmm. I mean, the rest of the story is great. Everything except for the last 15, they undo themselves in an attempt to set up this Avengers movie. Thor, fun, not super epic. Like in terms of a super, like the Iron Man movies are like
amazing.
The world is at stake. Thor, it's like Arizona might be hotter. Oh no,
Arizona might be hotter.
This could be bad.
I don't even know if that's a plot point, but I like it.
It's true.
There's a 15-foot guy coming.
I'm telling you, in terms of budgets, like the whole movie takes place in a desert. They shot it for like $9. They don't go anywhere. There's nothing. There's a couple of costumes, and then you know some stuff happens on a soundstage. There's not a lot of like, oh wow, this is it. I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah.
So and we have it. The Hulk movie that was the reboot. Did anybody even see it? They were expecting Oliver North, right? Or what's his bucket? Like, oh, that's right, we did. That did happen. Yeah. And then you recast it. So, like, really, it's just Iron Man and Friends that the movie is kind of banking on, and it makes $500 million because we loved the collecting of the. Oh, excuse me, how unprofessional.
Oh, that's okay. I thought it was me.
We loved the. it's unraveling. We loved collecting the little bits and pieces to see who was going to be in the Avengers movie. We knew the Avengers movie was going to come, and we forgave the okay quality of the other films, the non-Iron Man
films. I did feel like that. It's like, oh, they have to make these so they can have an Avengers movie.
And the sum of the parts was far greater than the whole. Because even the second Iron Man movie, people were like, that's okay. And now the third, oh gosh, it's falling apart. Everything's falling apart. Justin's new studio is worse for wear. Please hold. Now, that being said, I loved Avengers, and I think it's fantastic. And I do enjoy those other movies. Look, they're far better than any movie I can make. I'm not trying to pan them.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that the recipe for success really was in this making two movies a year that were all leading up to one movie.
Not only you're making big budget money off of those movies, but then you make even bigger budget money off of, you know what I mean? Like that's
the franchise.
Yeah, every little piece that leads it. That's why it's like, I think that anybody who's a hardcore DC fan is looking at that, making the argument you just said. Yeah. It's like, where is my Justice League?
With the exception of maybe the first Iron Man movie, none of those individual none of those Hulk, Captain America, Thor, Iron Man movies stand up to Dark Knight in terms of terms of story. And again, I'm a bigger fan of the Marvel stuff than I am the DC.
Because we've talked about it on
the
show.
But in terms of the movie, that's...
You take out Batman from those movies and just make him something else, and it's still very, I'm in.
It's such a great film.
Yeah.
And you don't need the franchise behind it. I mean, Captain America is just, they did Captain America the movie.
Yeah.
It's like the 1980s Superman, where you're like, wow, he's finally on the big screen.
Well, and it's funny, because one of the things that was said at the Superman panel was that they go, we really feel that the technology has reached a level where Superman can really be Superman. Like, we could shoot it and with CG and everything. I think Henry Cavill, who plays Superman, I think he smiled like 8 times live in a camera, and that's all he had to do. The rest was all done on a computer after watching the movie. But
he waved. He ate a sandwich,
that's enough. That's enough. The rest we'll just fix. Is it falling? Is that what's happening?
Yeah.
I was like, why are you staring at nothing?
I'm not moving.
let me hit pause. All right, there we go. Problem solved.
Way to go. the new studio, 800 people died. It's a little warmer in Arizona. The thing that's so funny about this Batman Superman movie is you remember a little movie with Will Smith called I Am Legend.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the film?
I do.
Do you remember why I'm bringing this up?
Nope.
Okay. So what year was that movie? Like
Will Smith will play Batman in the new movie?
Yes.
Oh.
And Neo. They're going to remake the Matrix movies the way they wanted them.
Oh my gosh.
He was supposed to play Neo.
Can you believe if the remake? I'm sorry to sidetrack you, but the remake trend continues. There's a possibility that in our lifetime, our grandchildren could be watching a reimagination of the Matrix when CG technology advances even more. They could go, well, now we want to go back and touch this thing that we came up with bullet time for.
You know what I mean? They're already remaking Men in Black, and they called it R.I.P. Department.
That's true.
So dumb. So in I Am Legend. you know, it takes place like 2 years in the future. So at the time the movie came out, I don't know, 2008. So it's like 2010, mm-hmm. which is the far future.
Yeah.
And so he's walking through Central Park that has been abandoned and war-torn for about a year. And so there's like plants and trees mm-hmm. and things growing everywhere. And as he walks through, there's an ad hanging on the wall. He makes no mention of it. He just walks by it. And there's a billboard that's torn and tattered of the Batman logo over the Superman logo. Yeah, and it's a it was a Warner film, I Am Legend, so it seemed like a giant in-your-face Easter egg of, look what we've got
yeah.
cooking in the background. So if from whatever year that was, 2008, it was like, where's our Batman yeah. Superman movie? And that was after Batman Begins, so it seemed like it was a no-brainer, and it was coming in no time, and maybe it was somebody... Maybe
I don't know. By the reaction there, which, yeah. like, here's what I imagine. Anytime I bring this stuff up, I feel like a good chunk of our audience is like, yeah, we know. Like, yeah, even probably. Though I didn't, you yeah. know? And I think I'm being unfair, and I think that maybe 13 of them know, and the rest are like, oh, great, now yeah, I yeah. know. It's that so, but the reaction at that panel in a room full of Comic-Con fans, there were easily 12 people dressed as yeah. Superman. And when they said, we're going to have Batman versus Superman, and they went,
yeah,
like,
no,
that was like,
that's when it was announced.
Okay.
It's all over Facebook now and everything. But yeah, that's when it first was told.
Oh, wow.
I assume.
I was there.
You were.
And that's not that cool.
Front lines. Was Mae Whitman there?
Nope.
She should have been. She should be at every panel.
Kevin Eastman was, though.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, he's like, guys, I created Ninja Turtles.
They're like, oh, great, let's bring him up. He can't have a seat, though. He can sit on part of the chair for
Bob Kane is in there.
That's Batman. Who made Superman? It was two dudes, right? It was a pair of brothers.
Yeah, Joseph Siegel and something else.
The thing I read Justice League. I don't read the Avengers. They're too convoluted. But yeah. I've been reading the new Justice League since they've joined the new 52. And the problem that I love to see them try to solve is the fact that they did not intend to make a superhero team or anything when they invented Superman or Batman or Wonder Woman or Aquaman or Green Lantern, Flash, or Cyborg. Yeah. Those are the characters. They just created characters that worked, and some sold, some didn't. And these happened to be the ones that became the main characters of the DC Universe, which eventually created the Justice League and why that all became popular. Why I find it just ultimately fascinating is because they've dealt themselves an impossible hand to play. Because on the same team, I'm supposed to believe that you have the Prince of Water, a guy who can make things happen using his mind, a dude that is faster than anything on planet, and a guy that is so impervious to anything that he cannot be destroyed, and he simply needs sunlight. He can breathe freeze air, laser beams out of his eyes. Like, He's a god on earth. And then
the best detective.
Yeah. And then you got a dude in a costume that's like, I'm kind of a ninja. I can kind of he's a human. He is nothing. He has nothing to defend himself. And I'm supposed to believe that army of ridiculously superpowered people can go to the front line against aliens. And then there's Batman that's like, I can help.
Well, it's funny because whenever you watch the movies, which I have now because I've seen
the animated Justice League.
Yeah, yeah, that what it is that he's the brains.
He's the brains.
He has
that's how they justify.
He's the one that's like, I my favorite thing is that, like, I think this is also in the Lego, Lego game, is that he stockpiles a bunch of kryptonite just in case.
Yes.
In case
that's a common theme within the Batman Superman relationship. We will definitely see that in the movie, or Batman will use kryptonite to manipulate Superman.
Nick was like, he goes, oh, I can't wait. He goes, Batman's gonna have kryptonite brass knuckles, and he's gonna beat the crap out of him
to level the playing field.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose it's still like it was never their intention. So that's what I love to see, the evolution of, like, how do we make this make sense? You see it on the original or the next generation of Star Trek, where they're like, you know, you've got all these like crazy wild ideas. They're just throwing things out to see what stick, what works. And then 7 years later, they're like, okay, so we've established that Data is one of the most intelligent life forms in the entire universe. let's see. Might have made him a little too powerful.
Emotionally, he's dumb.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. That's it. Let's give him dreams. And that's what they did for six episodes.
Look what I did to myself, too. This is the worst episode ever.
Oh, no.
My microphone is all disconnecting, too.
Is it over? Do we have 7 minutes?
We have 7 minutes.
That's it. Let's finish with our famous bit, 7 minutes in heaven. For the last 7 minutes of this episode, we will talk about making out.
Well, we just talked about Comic-Con. We didn't even touch on the video game aspect of Comic-Con. They had a corner, as they usually do.
Wait, what's the show about now? Oh, yeah. Welcome to Gamerland.
Yeah.
Comic-Con and Gamerland.
Did I open with Second Funny's podcast?
Oh, I don't know.
I think I did.
Probably.
I'm sorry.
Old habits die hard. I still call it SFP when I refer to it, but we're in Gamerland. The Second Funniest Podcast, who cares? We have 8 listeners who love voiceover actors.
Times 200.
There wasn't as big a showing of gaming stuff this year. I did appreciate the layout. It seemed, only been there a couple times, it seemed like a no-brainer layout to put your comic dealers and your low-end guys in the middle and then separate it with artists.
Yeah, because I'd been 2 like years prior, and the way it was is there was Artist Alley on the left, all the exhibits in the middle, and then all of the comic
somewhere
sales
over there, there were comic books
on the right hand side. It was all on the far right hand side was comic sales and collectibles and all that. Now what they did was they interconnected those, I think, to drive people towards the real point of it, which was comic book sales.
Yeah.
I think they were about to lose their vendors.
Well, so for me, I knew that the new Magic the Gathering core set had finally been released in hardback form just a few days before, and we saw several events of sealed deck play and stuff, and I've been way into it. So Justin and I, with our buddy Heath, we're walking around, and we went to 3 vendors that had comic book cards, and I must have talked about this for an hour with my wife later of how bad all these dudes missed their sales.
Yes.
Like, I asked 3 different people.
I felt like these were people, I don't know if it's just because you were looking for Magic the Gathering cards, but I thought it was like, oh, this is why it's not working out for you. It's because these aren't people who are there to sell. They're there just to make a buck. They don't even know about their product.
They didn't have a clue. Or, you know, I gather, I'm like, it's a little late in the day. You know, we've got about an hour left. You've been here for 2 days already. You've already had a long day.
One lady blatantly said that at the end she didn't know what you were talking about.
Didn't have a clue.
And she goes, well, what do you know about? She goes, I know about money. Like, literally, she pulled out a wad of cash she had in her under. She was hiding under her armpit, kind of like while her arms were crossed.
Yeah. And so that chick, I was like, okay, I'm not buying from her just because she has stuff. The second guy that I ended up having to purchase from because he was the only one with product there could not have been less interested in making a sale. I annoyed him by wanting to buy something because it meant he had to get up and get his credit card machine out.
Which gives reason to the comic book guy from The Simpsons.
It was like, I bothered his existence with my patronage, and he made like his, I don't know, 12-year-old cousin or nephew or something. Like,
the girl, wasn't it?
She had no clue what I was asking for. And the thing that bums me out, is the other group, the third vendor, knew what I would, like, were nice people, had a good conversation, but they... Well, rightly so, had run out of merch.
Yeah.
Like, they had sold all their stuff that I was looking to buy because they probably could talk about it intelligently. I was forced to go back to this other company, to this other vendor. The thing was, I didn't know much about the intro decks. There were 5. I eventually learned there were 5. All I saw was that there was just a slew of intro decks. I didn't know much about them. I'm trying to educate myself without bothering them too much by asking to look at the things on their shelves because they were busy not selling things to people. So I eventually decide to buy 2 decks, and we on the drive home, I break one open and learn that there were 5 intro decks of 5 different colors that are specifically designed for people that are new to the game to get invested right into it. I was like, you idiots. Had you taken the time to know your product and talk to me about it, they could have sold me all 5. I would have purchased all.
Oh, you would have. Oh, because you could have taken them to your family vacation and given them to everybody.
Exactly. It's what I would have wanted to be like, okay, this is the game in a nutshell. This is it in an easy to understand 5-part, 5 thing.
You could have 4 different people playing at the same time.
Or all 5 of us together. Yeah. You'd be able to see this is what a green deck is like, this is what a white deck is like, and understand the entire game. But they were too busy not talking to me and answering my questions or knowing anything about it that they missed the sale. On the drive home, I contacted Emerald Knights, which we've already talked about being a wonderful comic book store. They have game nights every night. They're open till midnight on Friday night. I walk in. They're like, yeah, we have them here. Talked to me intelligently. Sold me all the things. We had great conversations. Helped me find some boxes for them. So now I have matching boxes for each of the five color decks.
That's cool.
The red deck is in a red box. The green deck is in a green box. I walked out. I dropped all sorts of cash that was supposed to be used for spending on our vacation. But I walked out of there. I rearranged my luggage to make sure these cards were in my box. But it's like it all comes down to not customer service, but being a human and relating to another human. Customer service is just a fancy corporate-y way of saying being kind to somebody else and treating them well. And the guy missed out. He could have doubled his sale easily had he taken the time to talk to me.
And I wonder what's the genesis of that? Like, where does that come from? Is it that he's tired of dealing with these, you know, uber obsessive people, and so that makes you jaded? Or is it that
there could be a lot of looky loos? I mean, but I feel like if you knew much about sales, you know that I came to the table with money. Like, you could have seen it in
but
my
that's
eye.
That's what everybody does. I don't
no,
think
because some people, like, it's a fest of looky loos, right?
Yeah.
There's just that's what everybody's doing, is walking through and looking at stuff and bothering them and touching this and then moving on. But I was actively pursuing questions, actively wanted to look at things on the shelf. I was there to buy. And I think if you do retail, you got to know who your whales, dolphins, and minnows are. And
or
I
if you're
going to
be
a
jerk, just go, listen, are you just going to look at this, or are you actually interested in buying it?
Absolutely.
I mean, then we had that guy, Heath has this amazing ability to show him a quarter of the front cover of the Star Wars comics from the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And he could tell you what the whole cover was because he read them all, you know? And so we're at this one vendor who had the comics and they're going through, and at first he was like entertained, but he's like, what is going on here, you know? And Heath didn't want to do it because he said the guys will yell at us if that's what we do.
He knew.
And so we keep going, and I go, this is funny. I said, because he kind of yelled at us. And then I said, he said you were going to yell at us. And he goes, no, I'm not mad. He goes, I just don't understand what you're doing. And so then we kept doing it. And then he goes, isn't there somebody else who has those that you could go to and bother?
No, he didn't say that. He had half of an egg salad sandwich in his mouth. And he goes, isn't there somebody else you can bother with this?
Yeah.
He was so annoyed.
I'm trying to eat here.
That's what
he said. Yeah. I think he said, it's the end of the day. I'm just trying to eat here.
Yeah,
and it's
why?
Like, oh.
And see, a good salesman.
Now, here's the other point.
Would walk up and be like.
So I came back the next day with Nick, and Nick said, I buy collections. That's the way I read comic books. He goes, it's a little cheaper. He goes, they're the ones that I like.
Trade paperbacks or like a whole series?
Both.
Got it.
He said, I either get the trade paperback or I get the whole series because. And he goes, and the things I read, it's not really stuff that people are into. So I can get the whole collection for like $5 sometimes or $15. And so I guess he found one that was a whole collection that was only $15. And he was like, I can't believe I got this. I'm so excited.
That's great.
And
I like that guy.
And so I went through there and he told me, I'm going to buy some comics here. He goes, this is what he's wanted to do this since he was a kid.
No, that's great.
So I purposely avoided the guy with his egg salad sandwich and found the lady that we went and did and watched us do it and probably wasn't happy about it, but just laughed us off.
Yeah.
Because we weren't destroying the books. We were just lifting them. We were being very careful and respectful, you know, and all that stuff. So he bought from her, and then he found some other stuff that was at another vendor.
And got
that
guy an egg salad sandwich and ate it in his face.
Yeah, exactly. And threw it.
Threw it at him. So, but yeah, game wise, there wasn't. I don't feel like there was much
going
on.
There was nothing much going on.
They had.
I mean, there was a Watch Dogs thing that, for whatever reason, I know nothing about this game, but I'm excited about it. And the most exciting game thing that happened for me at Comic-Con was Heath told me that he played Last of Us and he thought it was better than Uncharted, and I was like,
and he loves Uncharted.
I'm on board then.
All right. It is a good game. I've heard great things. We saw some more clips.
I'm in the middle
Infamous.
Of God of War, and I want to just go buy The Last of Us to skip
why don't
it and
you?
Go back. I know. You're right.
I don't understand why you wouldn't do
I'm
that.
I'm going to buy it now.
All right. Download it.
I can't download it.
I also got the other set of unlockable characters for the PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale.
Ooh.
I can play as Zeus, Kratos's Zeus.
Villain.
Which is pretty great. And then there's a battle that happens in Fearless, and then suddenly the ground crumbles beneath you, and you fall to the ground, and Wipeout, the Wipeout HD, the flying Zero game.
The Star Fox new generation.
A track comes racing through half of the screen, and if you hit it, you get electrocuted, and there's cars
That's
flying
cool.
through. I was, because when I first got it, I'm like, Well, where's Wipeout? Like, that's a pretty big franchise. I know you can't have a fighter, but maybe, I mean, they got Twisted Metal Black in
there. At least the level, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's finally in there, so it's that's pretty awesome. Great. I recommend cool. that game. You should play.
Yeah, they were talking, they had the new Arkham Origins, which is coming out in October, which I've already pre-ordered.
Good for you.
I think they
I
had
pre-ordered
the...
Skylanders.
What? They have the PS, they had the PS4s there that you could play, and the Xbox Ones. Nintendo didn't have anything.
I didn't see anything Nintendo.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was interesting.
A tiny drop of Blizzard stuff.
Blizzard had half of it. And it looked like Minecraft, what they were like. That was weird
to
me.
They have a new card game that's like Magic based in the Warcraft universe.
Okay. But one of the things I thought was interesting, and I think it's worth going over on time a little bit, is that we stopped off at the, did we stop off? Yeah, we stopped off at the Walking Dead. They had a Walking Dead Telltale Games booth.
Yeah, we walked around it.
So they had a Walking Dead exhibit, which was like the prison, and they had people dressed as zombies so you could walk through for the TV show. And then they had the Telltale Games, and we learned from the guys, I think at the Sony booth, but not at the Walking Dead thing, that they're releasing those Telltale Games on Vita. And I was really frustrated, and I'm sorry for the listener that thinks that these games are amazing and I didn't at least jump on board with them. But I feel like, as we discussed on that episode, that putting them on the Vita is great.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome on the Vita because I don't expect it to be an entertainment system-esque thing and why that wasn't done way, way, way back when. Like, again, I just feel like what's missing with the Vita is, like, I'm playing Siphon Filter 2 right now on the Vita, and and I love it. I'm happy about it because it gives me a way to play a game where I don't feel like I'm wasting my money if I played it on my PlayStation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's, to me, is what new portable gaming should be.
I finally, you know, at Comic Con or E3 last year in 2012, I saw Epic Mickey 2, mm-hmm. Power of 2 or whatever, and debated getting it. Finally picked it up at GameStop for $30-some-odd used, and then found out this week that it's on the Vita, that they did a port over. I was like, no!
Why do you hate
that's
me,
that's rather
world.
Where I'd play it!
Ah, son of a
meanwhile,
biscuit.
Mega Man X, Mega Man 10, not on the Vita. Still not. Yeah. It'd be a great place for it. Although I did play the demo level. Those games are hard.
Yeah. I'm so mad that I bought that. I remember I told you I bought the Japanese port.
Oh, yeah.
I want to play this real quick because, but I don't know if it, we were talking about the voice acting, and I've been playing Siphon Filter, and it is funny how far voice acting has come. I don't know when Siphon Filter 2 was. Oh,
they
this
are
is...
coming. Go, torch it. Burn it all.
But what about the serum?
Leave nothing. Now I will show
this
you.
This is the first game. It's not even Siphon Filter 2.
Finish
oh, here
it.
We go. Siphon Filter 2 cutscenes. Let me just.
That was painful.
Hold up.
Oh, this is good.
I'm picking something up.
We're making the drop now. Morgan says you've got 2 hours to finish the operation.
That's not enough time. These guys aren't just falling over dead.
Morgan's ordered the F-22s back for refueling and ordnance. This entire mountain is going up in a cloud of gas. You've got to be ready to clear out.
Ramirez, get down the mountain and meet up with Chance. I'll handle this.
Now, see, when you want to be casual, what you don't want to do is break up the words that you're saying.
This guy who plays Gabe has the most amazing sounding voice, but has no idea what to do with it. Like,
it sounds like he read it cold and they kept it and they were out of time.
It was just
give me a sit rep.
We've got two snipers, one on either bluff. They've got us pinned and we're low on ammo. Ferguson took one in the shoulder, but he'll make it.
Oh, come on. No, stop. I'm done.
Right?
I'm done.
And that's a pretty big franchise. I think they made three of those. That's all I'm saying. All right. You can shoot us an email to show@thegamerlandpodcast.com. Is that right?
I don't. What is the name of the show?
Wow, it fell off the rails. Gamerland Podcast is the name of the show, and that's our website. It's not the.
It's just show@GamerlandPodcast.com.
Yeah, show@GamerlandPodcast.com. Or you can also send in questions to questions@GamerlandPodcast.com. Follow the show on Gamerland Pod. Go to Facebook.com/GamerlandPodcast. The big one, as we've been plugging, are the numbers going good there?
They look great.
Awesome. Please keep throwing the numbers there.
I don't know. I haven't looked at the page.
You've been
in a while.
On vacation. This is unfair.
It's been great.
Facebook.com/ I Once Like Cooper in His Own Animated Series. Please throw a like there. As I've said, we're going to Betty White this bitch and make it happen. On behalf of my new friend, Kevin Miller, this is just what you're saying.
Okay, bye.